This Digital Free Thought Radio Hour was originally broadcast on September 13th, 2017.
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Girl, loved the mess. I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed. I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I love my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age. Things I thought were true. Someday I'd break the big taboo of letting go of God.
This is WOZO Radio 103.9 LP FM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. I'm Doubter 5, and as usual, we have Wombat on the phone. Can you say hi, Wombat?
Testing, testing. Wombat, Wombat.
You are on the air. You're a little
The Wombat's on the air!
Hey.
Let's go.
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. If you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, well, you're just not.
You're not alone!
No, there are several atheist and rationalist groups that exist right here in Knox Patch, and we'll tell you how you can connect with them on the show a little later. Also, did you know that there was an atheist call-in television show broadcasting here in Knoxville? Did you know that, Wombat?
Yeah, but I'm a little bit sad because I wish it was just a little bit longer on TV. I feel like it only had one season, and I mean, I really liked Malcolm Reynolds. I think he was a great character. I thought the doctor was cool, and I loved the engineering girl there. But the movie was good. I'm glad they at least had a movie.
I don't think we're talking about the same thing. I'm talking about just an atheist call-in television show. It really doesn't have any plot. It might have a subject, but not a plot, and it's certainly not a movie. But this TV show has been on the air in Knoxville for over 7 years now, and we'll be talking about how you can connect with that show, too. And in spite of what Steve Martin would have you think, there are an awful lot of atheist songs out there, and you'll hear some of them right here on this program and generally on this station as they are in rotation. You heard one on the intro. That intro was Letting Go of God. I can't tell you the artist, but it was the main theme song of Julia Sweeney's one-woman show called by the same name, Letting Go of God. Excuse me. And I highly recommend anybody go out and buy that DVD, CD, whatever, and listen to it. Very entertaining and very good. Wombat, what did you want to talk about this time? I think you were going to bring the subject.
Sure. Just as a heads up, the song Letting Go of God was written by Jill Sobule.
Oh, okay, great.
S-O-B-U-L-E. Jill Sobule. Yeah, and Julia Sweeney actually had a part in writing that as well.
Very good.
So my topic of the show is about censorship. Recently this week, I had some weird news. There's some weird news out there on the internet, and it involves a video game company or a video game distribution company called Steam. Now, if you have a PC, if you've ever played a video game that's on a PC, you've most likely heard of Steam. It's basically
Steam. S-T-E-A-M,
yeah.
Steam. Okay.
That's it. It's basically a store that services people who... It's a great way to find new games. It's a great way for developing video game developers to publish their own games for wider masses to get a hold of. And for the most part, it's basically the iTunes of video games. And it has a huge, huge influence in that regard because there's not really a lot of competitors that can compete with Steam, not in terms of price or in terms of size of the library. And what happened recently is, you know, like I said, developing or burgeoning game developers can make games and put them on Steam for people to buy, at their own decision if they want to make it or not. So at their own leisure, they can choose to buy the game or rate it up or rate it down, whatever. And it was a developer that made a game called Fight of the Gods. And Fight of the Gods is a video game where you basically, these guys made these 3D models of various kinds of figures in various forms of spiritual mythologies from around the world and different time periods, including Jesus Christ, but we also have Zeus, we have Gongjon, we have Shiva, we have some folks. Like some even obscure ones as well, as well as Muhammad, like various different kinds of figures. And I think for the most part, it was done in a pretty tongue-in-cheek manner. And the game is essentially a fighting game. So you would have, you would pick your fighter, which would be one of the, you know, spiritual gods or prophet. And they would be transported to this side screen where they fight each other. And then at the end, one of them wins, and then you can replay it again and fight again and stuff like that. It's a pretty fun, and when I look at it, it looks like these guys made a really good effort to make a good fighting video game that had like a pretty interesting twist on it. And again, it was a game that you could choose to play or not on entirely on your leisure. However, Malaysia heard about the game, saw the trailer for the game, and decided that they don't want to have any game that features any sort of profit in, allowed for any of their, you know, or basically the, I guess the leaders of Malaysia didn't want any of their, you know, population to be able to have access to that game if it's going to depict prophets in any form, because they are, they come from a religious background where it's against their point of persuasion to depict any sort of, you know, religious deity or prophet in any kind of form. And as a result, they banned not just that video game from being able to be played in Malaysia, but they actually turned off access to Steam for their entire country until that one video game was removed from Steam's library. They made a complaint. And I thought it was a pretty interesting thing to talk about how, the power of religious groups to censor things without really much of a fashion, but basically kind of throwing a fit. Because by virtue of them not being, by virtue of them canceling Steam, no one in Malaysia can play any video games off of Steam because the ISPs are blocked. Or they can't buy any new games. They have no longer access to anything in the store. So even people who are devout followers of whatever, you know, of the religion they have over there, and that's probably not so important because we're going to talk about a bunch of religions today. But none of them have access to the Steam store. None of them can play any games that are brand new. None of them that were developing games, like had a job of developing games for Steam, can work. You cut off an entire stream of commercial revenue for a lot of different people just because you felt like it was the thing that you had the power to do. And I guess what we're talking about is that's the theme of the show, censorship. Things that I see where I notice where religious groups can
create
block
their own
information from people and access to things that most people should have the right to have.
I like to call it a belief bubble. You create your own environment of maybe of only people who have the same beliefs as you. You only watch TV shows or go to video games or online to only to sites that support your presupposed beliefs. There is a such thing as a Google bubble. The Google search engine will keep track of what you search and give you more of the same. So you end up in your own little bubble of reiteration. It doesn't it doesn't suggest things that are out of your normal search engine, search history. So, you know, you're kind of got to come up with your own things to search for, if you're going to get any new results. And that's the same thing with belief. You know, particularly cults, get it down to a science. They won't let you read newspapers or watch TV shows or listen to news that may undermine their beliefs. And a lot of religions do that to some extent. And that's counterproductive, to say the least.
Absolutely. I think a good example of like that Google story you're talking about is if Google detects, if you type in Google into a random browser, maybe like at a library that has no history on you, and you type in Apple, and you search on Apple, what it's going to show you is like the Wikipedia of the fruit, maybe the definition of the word Apple. But if Google knows you're like maybe a guy, particularly a male from the ages of 20 to like 30,
yeah.
it's going to send you as the company Apple
yeah.
as the first link.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe the stock of Apple immediately after that. And then you'll get the definition of
well,
Apple.
If you're my age, it could send Apple. You, if you're my age, it could send you to Apple Records. You know, the Beatles record company.
Yeah, maybe. So you do turn to get, there's ways that you can manipulate the kind of data that you have available to you by people who have the power to give you certain kinds of information. And I think that falls into what religion kind of is able to do. We see an example of this with regard to kids being raised underneath religious household or head of households,
yeah.
where they may not necessarily have access to the best kind of teaching or the best kind of science, particularly, because they may come in conflict with, you know, what they're learning in church. And as a result, they may be told one thing in school if they're even lucky to even have that. But when they come home, they're rehearsed and retaught the proper way their family wants them to learn in the particular bubble that their religion has them under. Or if the power that be is so strong, they may not even have access to the first exposure of proper science teaching in the first place. And
yeah.
that's something that can interfere with, you know, the school teaching as well as the way how the principal manages the school or even how the city manages that as a actual problem and they just deny it.
Right.
We have this problem where we like to be comfortably told things that we already sort of know or at least things that we've been already been taught. And when it comes to being taught new things, we have to be more comfortable with the fact that there's a lot of different perspectives in the world and a lot of different ideas, some of them we may not like, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't be exposed to them, because when we get to the position where we can shut down certain voices and not others, we run the danger of pushing ourselves into a particular bubble where only one voice or one kind of story is being told. And we all suffer from that.
Right. It cuts down on your avenues for progress as well. You're limiting yourself. There's a corporate phrase that says, think outside the box. But they really should be think outside your bubble, because it's something that you've either created for yourself or someone, some religion or, I don't know, societal entity has created for you, and you need to be thinking outside of that to understand what's going on in the world and get better perspectives and maybe new insights.
Right. It also makes it really hard to have an honest dialogue with someone, because you're basically talking to someone who hasn't been exposed to things as regularly as you have, or taking, and as a result, they may have a completely different biased perspective on what should be common knowledge. I think it's kind of like talking to someone who was not taught the last four letters of the English alphabet, you know?
Okay.
And, like, you can, like, say, hey, how are you doing? And maybe they get it a little bit. But, like, when you start throwing out a lot of words that have W, X's, Y's, and Z's in it, they're like, I don't have a frame of reference for what you're talking about. My life only has these letters in it, and anything other than that must be wrong, because it's not the things that I'm comfortable with. And they can buy into that if they buy into that bubble. And what religion is all about, or for the most part, what we can see when they use this power completely wrong, is they reinforce the fact that whatever is not inside the bubble is wrong, and whatever is inside is good. And when they get to the point where they can, like, shut down companies or make companies bend to their wills in order to manipulate whether it's education or commercial revenue of sales of games, or down to, like, who gets elected president or what kind of policies are being issued to relegate how people live their lives in a country, these have lasting effects. Then they're a problem. And I think we need to be mindful of not only just the act of censorship by religion and not only the act of living within our own bubbles, even if we need that, if that's something we need to get out of, but we need to be aware of there's a clear agency involved with regard to stripping away what are essentially our rights to knowledge, our rights to information,
right.
and we
mm-hmm.
should be willing to fight against
yeah.
that.
Yeah, some of the religious groups out there are particularly stringent, like Mormons don't like you to listen to certain TV or radio shows or read
yes.
Certain newspapers or books. The Jehovah's Witnesses are even worse about that. They strictly forbid certain exposure outside of the. I'll call it a coven. It's not, but what gets me is it's pretty bad when you get a religious person talking to a secular person, because the religious person will not move outside of their bubble or entertain things outside of it. Generally speaking, depends on how fundamental they are. But when you get two religious people together who are different religions, the conversation shuts down pretty early. And
they're talking two different languages.
Right. And they're not allowed to change their mind. They're not allowed to influence each other to the point of changing their mind. What gets me is when they have these interfaith conferences and people from all different faiths go there, what they generally end up talking about is how the secular world influences their particular religion. They don't really talk about theology very much. It's how we have to put up with this kind of stuff that the government is doing, and what can we do about it, and what do we have in common in that front, rather than, my religion says this and your religion says that, because they would just end up fighting and at loggerheads.
Right. I can think of an example where a lot of my colleagues, they go to a Bible study that has, I've gone to various places where people claim they go to Bible studies. And while I don't doubt that they do, I don't actually think they're studying the Bible, because they come back out. They're even more convinced that it's true, which may, if they properly studied it, maybe they would have more other concerns there than just an excuse to reinforce what they believe. And I think that's what it is. So I asked them, when you study the Bible, what other people are around you, what chapters are you studying? And they'll tell me, the happy chapters, Romans, they'll go through Psalms, they'll go through Proverbs, they'll talk about, Jesus' speech on the Mount.
Or the stories in the Pentateuch.
For the most part, they're bouncing around.
Uh-huh.
Right. They're bouncing around. But the issue is, I think one more thing is, the concept of studying with people who already agree with the thing that is the crux of the subject matter that you're studying. If I wanted to learn how to do math, for example, I would want to do a math. I would want to read a book. They'd give me a problem to solve. I would try my best to solve it, and then give it to my partner who's studying with me and say, "Is this answer right? Is this does it look like my work is accurate?" And they would go over my.
But that's a falsifiable thing.
Right. It's the sort of thing where even if I got it right, even if it was absolutely correct, or even if it was like a vocabulary problem and we're just going over it, there's a fact-checking process. If I can get some corrections, even if I'm wrong, and through that process, I get not just a better understanding of this book is right 100% of the time, because sometimes we may even get a wrong textbook, but sometimes we get what really is a better understanding of how to know things. We have a better model of how to get information. We have a better idea of how to solve math. Not just how to follow what's in the book, but we can close the book, open up another math book, and use the same principles that we developed, solve those problems as well. Or if there's a vocabulary thing, we can use the words we learned to read another book that uses the same words.
It's like when you go to college. It's like when you go to college, it's not necessarily the subjects that you study that give you the most usable skills. It's learning how to study and how to gather that information and put it in a usable format or a presentable format. That's the kind of skill that you can use for the rest of your life, even if the subject matter changes over time.
And you don't get that by just getting the right answer given to you at the back of the book every single time, or talking to people who will say, yep, that's the correct answer 100% of the time, or hanging out with people who agree with you 100% on all matters of the things that you guys were growing up learning or being taught by other people who did the exact same thing, of never really challenging the textbook or challenging themselves enough a good metal. The phrase I'm looking for here is, they say steel sharpens steel. That's what I've heard from my colleagues who went to the Bible. Steel sharpens steel is a reference to them doubling down on their faith and improving their faith by talking with other people who share the same faith. But as most people who would give it a second thought would, or at least a deeper level of consideration would know, is that steel doesn't sharpen steel. Steel dulls steel. When you clang two swords that steel together, that's a dull point that they get hit on. That sharpness of the blade gets dulled, by repeatedly hitting another blade of the same sharpness over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Diamonds sharpen steel. Mm-hmm. Harder metals than steel sharpen steel. There are things that are different that challenge the steel and make it a stronger thing as a result, because the steel is being challenged by something that's different and forcing to conform to a new shape. That's how you get better at learning things. And as a result of censorship, it's like taking away the diamonds. It's like taking away harder metals, and you're only left with steel. By religion blocking access to even the idea of a parody video game, it makes it difficult for people to appreciate parody or even have access to video games where there's many other forms of expression or economic revenue that would be available to them otherwise. Yeah. And that's why situations like this kind of suck.
Yeah, there's a glaring example, or glowing example of that, in Lee Strobel's book, The Case for Christ. He starts off by saying he used to be an atheist, and he decided to really study, you know, the scripture, talk to all the experts, and really determine what was true. And he does. He talks to probably a dozen different people with doctorates and specialists in old manuscripts, textual criticism. But he doesn't talk to a single non-believer. All of the people that he talks to are Christian believers, evangelicals, every last one. And then he considers that a good argument for the believing in Jesus as the Savior of mankind, etc. But you've got to hear the other side if you're going to get any kind of well-rounded information out of it, and anything worth judging your beliefs on.
Right.
Which is why we're on the air.
It's a weird parody. Yeah. I would also say one quick thing. Like, if you go on internet on YouTube and you watch debates for, like, people who, religious-related debates, the most common kind of debate that you'll see is someone who's religious arguing against someone who's secular or someone who's not religious.
Uh-huh.
And I always find those, while they're interesting, there's so many of them that I feel like I would rather see a religious debate between someone who's, like, from, say, Islam versus someone who's a Christian or someone who's a Hindu.
Which would highlight
two different religions.
Which would highlight the problems and the lack of evidence that they have for it.
Because everyone's willing to debate the atheist, but no one's willing to debate the person who has the other faith in the same kind of form.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it speaks to the fact that the person who's secular, the person who doesn't have an adherence to any kind of religion, comes into any kind of argument with religious basis with a fundamental understanding of, I have a model that I need to use that needs to be sharpened by maybe pre-existing or formed of data that I can use to develop a better model of reality. This person claims to have that. I'm open to hearing them. I want to hear what they have to say, and I'll determine whether or not I'm convinced by that argument.
Right.
Their openness to learn something and willing to challenge the thing that they're being told makes it a productive conversation.
Right.
And at the end of it, the atheist tends to be the person who learns the most, even if they lose the debate, because maybe they just argue poorly. But they lose the most out of it. Like, man, I learned how to respond to this kind of thing. I learned this kind of perspective exists. Maybe I didn't have a good answer for them.
Yeah.
I'll improve myself, and next time I do this, I'll get a lot better at it.
Right.
Whereas the person who's religious really only has that one note, really only has that one beat that they can hit. And if they lose, they aren't changing that much because the script isn't changing, and they're stuck to that script. Because by a function of the religion that they're in, they've already censored all other available data to them, and now I'm no longer as open to changing my mind and being open to new arguments.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so rare to see a debate between two different religious factions in a podium setting where they're both sitting and maybe talking to each other and trying to have an honest dialogue, because it's inherently unproductive because neither of them are willing to change or learn from each other.
But it would
and
be,
that is indicative of a problem.
And it would be glaringly obvious if you got two religions that are up there arguing with each other that all they are doing is just making cross claims. The one's claiming one thing, the other one's denying it and making another miraculous claim. Claim after claim after claim. They're not really thinking. They're not really exploring the beliefs. They're just, you know, bringing the claims up that the Bible has in it, or the Quran, or whatever your holy book is, or what they've been taught about it, just one ridiculous or magical claim after another, where at least if they're when they're arguing against atheists, we try to fall back on rationality and understanding and reasoning to try to find out why this is wrong, why this doesn't make sense, why the claim that you're making doesn't stand up, that type of thing.
Right.
But the religious, we just they can't even do that. They just say, I've got this counterclaim, and that's the end of the conversation.
Because they've never been taught how to properly present a point with substantive demonstrable evidence.
Yeah.
They've only been taught that confidence in place of that is good enough,
yeah.
And they've never been challenged enough to the point where they realize that's not good enough,
yeah.
Because they've only ever been around other people that are willing to reinforce the idea that confidence is better than evidence. So
and
when
about,
they're up against a person...
Go ahead.
I'll go for it.
I was going to say about the best thing that you can expect from them is anecdotal. I mean, you'll say, well, you got to understand why this has to be true. Think about this story, you know, and they'll give this parable or something from the Bible or an anecdote about the Christian child who went to the college and ran into an atheist professor. It's all anecdotal. They don't have anything besides faith to fall back on. They don't have evidence. If they had evidence, they wouldn't use faith.
I think faith is the cornerstone because really I've had this say I would daydream about this idea just today where if you ask someone why they believe in their particular God, maybe the first thing they'll go to is, well, my holy book says so. But really that's just a statement of I believe what my holy book says, which doesn't really explain why they believe it. They just reinforce what they believe. And when they should have explained why they believe it.
Right.
So you can ask them, well, why do you believe in the holy book? And then they'll say, well, it's true. Why do you believe it's true? Well, it's what my holy book says.
Right, it's circular.
The holy book says it's true.
Yeah.
And again, they're presenting what they believe, but not why they believe it. And
right.
they've never had the chance to really break down why that's not an explanative answer for what should be the most important question and position in their life.
To be sure. We're at the bottom of the hour. I'm going to have to take a break here, give station identification, and we'll play a song here, one of those atheist songs I was mentioning earlier. This is WOZO Radio, 103.9 LP FM, live here in Knoxville, Tennessee. And the song we're going to play today for you at the break is Annie DeFranco's song called What If No One's Watching? And that's probably the case. Here we go.
Say what we have to say. Oh, 'cause if you're not trying to make something nothing better, but as far as I can tell, you are just in the way. I mean, what if no one's watching? What if when we're dead, we are just dead? I mean, what if it's just us down here? What if God is just an idea someone put in your head? I mean, what if no one's watching? What if no one's watching? Sunset and the camera would pan away, but the sky is just a little sister tagging along behind the buildings trying to imitate their grace. What if no one's watching? What if no one's watching? What if no one's watching? What if no one's watching?
You're listening to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.
And we're back. This is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. I'm Doubter 5, and we have Wombat on the phone. Say hi, Wombat.
Hey, I'm the Wombat.
And welcome back. This is the portion of the show when we usually talk about, and we will, talk about the free thought groups that are here in Knoxville and how you can connect with them if you like. First, there is the Atheist Society of Knoxville. This was founded in 2002. November marks our 15th year. ASK now has has over 740 members, and you can find them online at KnoxvilleAtheist.org, or just search Google for Knoxville Atheist and you'll run into them. Or you can go to one of their meetups at meetup.com and look for the Knoxville Atheist. It's just that simple. Also, you can join us in person if you'd like to. It's a weekly meetup that happens every Tuesday evening at West Hills Flats and Taps on Kingston Pike near Westtown Mall, where we get together for food, drink, and conversation. Everyone is welcome, as long as you don't come to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. Thank you, Matt Delahunty. I think I need to turn that up a little. Yes. Another large free-thinking group here in Knoxville are the Rationalists of East Tennessee. They've been around for over 20 years. RET has bi-weekly presentations and discussions that are held at the Pellissippi State Campus near Hardin Valley Road. They meet the first and third Sundays at the Goins Administration Building Cafeteria Annex. That's it. And if that's too much to remember, just go to rationalist.org and click on upcoming events, or just follow the signs once you get on campus. There's also Sunday Assembly, which is a group that started in England just a few years ago and now is spread around the world. It's a no-God church setting for those who've had enough of religion, but would still like the fellowship of a church-type gathering. That's the Sunday Assembly. They only meet once a month, however, on the fourth Sunday, downtown near the fairgrounds in the International Building. Then, now that school has started back, the Secular Student Alliance has started back up, which has programs to give camaraderie and community to any free-thinking high school or college student who would like to be involved in the free thought movement or would just like to find other free thinkers to hang with. Everybody needs like-minded friends, and atheists are no different. And finally, there's a newcomer to the free thought group, which acts more like a singles group, and that's the Humanist of East Tennessee. Go on meetup.com and look for the Humanists of East Tennessee. They formed just a few years ago. They like to do things like dinners, hikes, movies, swimming, picnics, and things like that. Find them on Meetup, meetup.com. Earlier in the show, we were talking about the Atheist Call-In TV show. Well, it's called Free Thought Forum, and you can see it every Tuesday between 5 and 6 on Comcast Channel 12 or Charter Channel 192. If you don't have cable, you can watch it streaming online at ctvknox.org. You can also find archive of some of their shows on YouTube, where a fan has been recording and posting them.
just search, for three words, Free Thought Forum Knoxville. Also, if you're interested in getting involved in the TV show or the radio show, just come to an Ask Meetup or RET meeting and talk to us about it. You could be our next co-host or guest. One other little announcement is I'm going to be a guest myself, a guest host on 92.3 FM on the 28th of this month at about 7:30. That's, I think, Thursday the 28th. And I'll be with me and another atheist, I think, will show up for the show and do an interview with the host at that time, with the host, I mean. I have one other announcement.
Call sign W-A-T-E. W-A-T-E.
Oh, that's W-A-T-E.
Six.
Knoxville. Okay, cool. 92.3 FM or 760 AM. Let's see. There was one other milestone that America has hit recently. There was an article about it. White Christians are now make up less than 50% of the American population. That's quite a milestone since, like, forever in the history of America, Christians, specifically white Christians, have been, 90% of the population? Anywhere from 75 to 90 anyway. And for the first time this in U.S. history, the U.S. now has less than 50% of the population are white Christians. And was there anything else, huh?
What does that mean? Like, what should we expect by that? And
well, it doesn't mean that Christianity is below that. Of course, there are all kinds of minorities, Latinos, blacks, you name it, that are Christians in America. So Christianity still makes up about 75-80% of the population. It's just that it was interesting that the balance has shifted just a little bit this year, and it reached a milestone. I can't think of anything more fundamental or profound about that than just the number.
You know, there's a growing population of people who are not religious, and as a result, or falling out of religion. That percentage isn't going up. And as a result, you'll find that the narrative in church settings is, you know, our values are changing for the worse. Things are getting way bad, way more terrible. People are becoming more lustful. There's more sex that's being shown on television. And it's a result of the fact that people are, you know, slowly moving away from what is their God's inherited value.
Mm-hmm.
And they can point to a statistic like this and say, listen, this is why you need to start to evangelize to your brothers and sisters. This is why you need to start talking about
the good news.
This is why we need people to recruit.
Yeah, the thing about it is we live in the best world we've ever lived in. The way that you get money and you get support is to tell everybody how bad things are. And you can find things in the news and in your society that are bad. But if you look at it, we've never been healthier. We've never lived longer. We've never lived better lives. We're happier, more active than we've ever been in history. It's a red herring is what it is. It's a false drum that they use to beat, drum up, more resources and people to their cause. Check out those claims that they give, and I think you will find that there's big holes in them.
It seems. Oh, am I still on the air? Just making sure.
Sorry?
I hear static. Cool.
No, it's the fan.
It seems like if in the event that they can't bring more people into the church, they may become a little bit more, not only dogmatic, but aggressively so, to the point where you might have people coming to you, approaching you, recommending you to come to, you know, their establishment, or maybe a barbecue that's hosted by their particular church. Or, for example, going to like a 5K run that I did this weekend that was surprisingly being hosted by a church.
Yeah.
Or they were a major sponsor of the church, of the run. A church was a major sponsor. And they had the insistence of starting the run, not with like a pledge of allegiance, but like with a big prayer. And and everyone closes their eyes. He's like, please bow your heads and in reverence of our Lord Jesus Christ while we start this prayer for this run. And I don't bow my head, but I just continue stretching, you know, getting ready for the run. And I'm just looking at all the other people who are doing the same thing as me. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of people that are bowing their heads and nodding. But, like, for the most part, that wasn't why we came to run. We came to have a competition.
Right.
To challenge ourselves, mm-hmm. came to have a good time. But you'll find that religion will be injected more in other things as it becomes more desperate, because these could be the death throes of what is a dogmatic country.
Yeah.
We could be going to something a bit better. And as a result, we'll go there kicking and screaming. And I think that this is like what you're bringing up right now represent that. Because even though white Christians are, that population is going down, there's still black Christians, there's still Hispanic Christians, there's still Asian Christians. And altogether, they're still fighting for the same team. And that is the opponent of interest, the religious-minded mindset, or the ones that aren't willing to be open to other ideas or other forms of concepts because they've been censored with regard to what kind of information is available to them,
yeah.
and they're stuck in these bubbles. And that's what we need to be fighting. And even if these populations are going down, we need to fight to make them go down faster. By fight, I just mean being willing to talk to the people that are around you, being willing to challenge in a polite, productive manner, and being willing to just have an openness that they may not change in one day or after one conversation, but if you just give them a little bit of an idea that you are open with being secular, basically, it gives them an idea of, oh, well, secular people aren't all bad because my best friend's secular,
uh-huh.
and he's not a terrible person I believe should go to hell. Maybe that'll make them think a little bit more. So live by good example, that's all.
Yeah. And some of the things that they point to as being bad aren't really bad. I mean, they'll say, look at the rise of homosexuality in America today. We must come back to Christ. In other words, we have a whole segment of our population who doesn't have to hide anymore. They don't have to lie. They're not being strung up when they're found. They're not being beaten, although that still happens. But we've got a segment of our society that can now be themselves and be openly so and be happy. It makes for a happier society. And if you've got a real problem with that, you really need to look at why you have a problem with it. It doesn't affect you. It's not your problem. And if you want to practice your religion, there's nothing stopping you. Religious practice is free in America, and we even support that. However, you don't get to dictate what other people believe and or practice or pass laws to enforce your religion on them.
I agree. It's not your prerogative to be borrowing anyone's offense or by virtue of you being offended, cutting off access to things that other people need, enjoy, like,
mm-hmm.
or could
right.
potentially expose themselves to.
Yeah.
It's not your prerogative to be anyone else's parent other than your
right.
or your own kid.
Uh-huh.
And even if it's for your own kid, give them, be considerate of the fact that eventually they'll be actual adults that will be operating in a world where they will know what they've been cut off from if they're allowed
right.
to have an opportunity to mm-hmm. be exposed to new ideas and have their ideas challenged.
Right.
And whether they come back to you as a parent that they trust for information, or whether they know it'd be weird of you because you'll tell them only a very specific story, makes all the difference of how you should treat them now.
Right. And the thing about it is, if your beliefs are true, all you really need to do is tell your children to go out and search for truth. What are you afraid of? Are you afraid that they'll find it's not true? Then if it's not true, wouldn't you want them to know it? Wouldn't you want to know it? How much do you value truth versus how much do you value your religion? You need to think about that as well.
Good point.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
What
yeah.
else you got?
Oh, I don't know. That's about it, I guess.
So I got a story.
Uh-huh.
It's a parody story that I brought up.
Cool.
I actually sent this to Gratified a little while back ago, and it's regarding a family in England that would not let their child, whose name was Caleb, go to any
oh, yeah.
school.
I remember that. Yeah.
Other students were not also named Caleb. And I thought it was a funny parody of a story because if you open it up, or if you go into the actual story, it's basically, mm-hmm. It's just a satire. But
mm-hmm.
it follows along with what we were talking about today. where basically the kid came home and said, hey, I was talking to some of my other friends or students at school, and they said their name wasn't Caleb, and that kind of freaked me out because I thought everyone was named Caleb.
Yeah, and my parents were. My siblings are. Everybody in the family is Caleb. And then they send him to school, and there's not a Caleb.
Yeah. So instead of the parents just being like open with them, they saying like, hey, there's other parents in the world. They have kids, and they name them different names, and that's not a big deal. Or explain to them how, like, you know, there's a lot of different people that got last names through different cultures, all that stuff. They said, nah, screw it. We're not going to do that. We're just going to keep him home and homeschool him so that we can continue the belief that his name's always Caleb.
Yeah.
And I thought, isn't that, like, so perfect of what is essentially the result of taking away something that a person could use to develop themselves better and become a better person because you decided that it's better for them not to have that. You know, there's I don't doubt that there's cases where it's good to reduce, you know, access to something as a result of you thinking it might harm them.
Yeah.
Like, we have, like, drug abuse programs that we grew up in, like, with DARE, or that drug awareness resistance education.
Uh-huh.
And things like, regardless of how effective people thought that was, I thought it was a good program. I was actually one of the DARE kids. As a result of that program, I knew how to stay away from drugs, how to stay focused in school, and then I graduated, and I did pretty well. But it's not like I denigrated the people who decided to, follow drugs or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was just you gave me information, and from that, I made an honest choice of where I wanted to be. And I don't disregard people who said, hey, I smoked weed or something like that. It's like, that's not a big deal.
Yeah.
Like, I also don't think people who smoke weed should go to prison for, like, nonviolent crimes or anything like that.
Well,
but, like,
think of go ahead.
Oh, sorry. It's just, you gave me access to information and trusted me with it so that I could make my own reasonable decision.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all we're asking for.
Well, think of sex education.
That's perfect.
You know, people keep their children out of sex class because it offends them, but then they end up getting pregnant because abstinence only does not work. If it did, even Mary wouldn't have gotten pregnant. But, but abstinence only, like, there's a joke I heard about it. It's kind of funny. It says, priests can't keep their member in their own pants. But your child who's, you know, going through the throes of puberty, he can control it. Just tell him not to do it. That'll work. You know?
Right.
So, it's idiotic.
It is an extreme side of basically saying, take your kid back home from school and tell them that no other kid's named Caleb. You're ignoring a problem. You're censoring information that the kid could use to make a formative decision or to help him be prepared for when he may be exposed to competing ideas and he doesn't have to rely on just the one that he had since he was a baby.
Uh-huh.
Information changes over time, and I think that's a beautiful thing. Information changes because we get better information over time. And that means the information that we had may not necessarily be the most up-to-date or the best kind of information that we should rely on to get a better and more accurate understanding of the world that's around us. And when we get, basically, when we're born, we're given like a starter pack to determine what's true and what's not true. And while that's useful, we should always be working towards developing that pack. I say a starter pack as if it was like a starting toolkit. You should always be looking for sharper tools, more useful tools, tools that are more reliable. So that way, when you become an adult, you can have a really good way of parsing true things from false things. But if you're not given any access to any information at all, if someone decides, you know what, that's too complicated for us to talk about, or we think learning this makes people decide X, Y, Z, you cut that out of a curriculum, you cut that out of like a lifestyle, you cut that out of like access economically to something, you used to burn the books. And you're left with a person who has a vulnerability more than some form of protection that you gave them, because now they don't know how to handle themselves or how to parse information in this particular field. What you said about sex education, I think, is right on the point, because you have people who will graduate out of high school who may not understand the proper contraceptive actions, or may not understand how to explain to their own children how their body might be changing if they might be a different sex or something like that.
Yeah, or even where babies come from. I mean, as simple as that.
they might be able to answer that one.
No, what I'm saying is there are instances where nurses, well, you know, talk to a couple who've been trying to have kids, and they're just not doing it right because they have no sex education whatsoever.
I am hard-pressed to believe that's a true thing. Not to be explicit on the radio, but, like, it's not that bad to figure out. We've been having babies before schools even existed in the first place. But I would say, you know, like, in terms of, like, STDs, like, how to check yourself,
right.
like, or how to do mammograms, or self-mammograms, or why do men get bumps on their private parts, and how to check and stay on top
or
of that.
Or how to use a condom, you know.
How to properly use a condom, right. How to properly manage birth control pills.
How to acquire them. Yeah.
Exactly. All these things are necessary in order to be a healthy adult. Whether you choose to have sex or not is a completely different question, a completely different decision,
right.
a completely different, you know.
Or what type of sex to have, you know.
It's a question, exactly. Mm-hmm. Or with who.
Right.
But it's primarily a resource of information that you have available to you. That is very useful because if everyone else has this information too, it raises the average idea of what sex is so that you can determine whether or not even if you want it or not. You may even listen to all this and be like, I don't even want any of that. Is it cool that I don't have babies before I'm 30? Is it cool if I don't try to start a family before, you know, I have to retire? Does literally every single person have to do
that? Not only that.
And if they don't, are they failures of some sort?
Yeah.
No. Like, you should know about those things as well.
Yeah, not only that, but it's helpful to the general health of the society if people know how to have sex without passing on STDs and HIV and all that. Once they understand, if at the general education level is brought up to par, then instances of that will go down and the general health of society will go up.
Right. I think, for the most part, having access to information is what makes a society better.
Yeah.
And lacking that, it comes to our detriment. Absolutely.
Yeah. And we're down to like 5 minutes before we got to end the show. So if you want to wind it up.
Okay. So I guess what I'm saying in short is when a powerful group takes away something that can be used to express sometimes complicated ideas or even very lighthearted manners or even an offensive critique of something, when a religious group takes that off the table, doesn't even let that be exposed to have a proper reaction to, something's lost in that event. And it would have been much more better for Malaysia's part to allow the game to exist, but then condemn it as a game, or basically say, hey, listen, we really dislike this, we don't approve of it, and let their own people demonstrate their own loyalty to whatever, you know, art and dogma that they support over there, so that they can demonstrate, hey, and not only do we denigrate it, but our people don't even want this game anymore. We are striking steam as a group. We're not purchasing anything from the store anymore because we disapprove of this game that's on the title. But we do that uniformly as a group through our own volition and not through a mandate that was done by one person who was upset by it.
Yeah.
That would have struck a much stronger message to the entire world. And as a result, they just look like very intolerant people that are willing to be exposed to different ideas because it offended them, and through offense they feel that they're justified to censor data and affect their entire population and possibly even their perception of that dogma that they hold to the entire rest of the world.
True.
Doesn't sharpen steel. Different ideas do. Different metals do. Different diamonds do. And it's hard to find a diamond, but it's worth digging
different
for.
Different perspectives
when you do.
Yeah.
You put yourself on that realm where you're able to do it. What do you think?
No, that's true. I've only got a minute or so. I don't want to mention a few things here. This is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour, and you can go to the digitalfreethought.com website and read articles there about atheism and the different topics that are involved. You can email the show by writing doubter5@digitalfreethought.com or digitalfreethought@gmail.com. Either way, we'll get it. I've got a video that I'd like people to look up if they would. We were talking about if you believe that your religion is true and you really want to just tell your kids to go look for truth. Look for true things, and if it's true, they'll find them. They'll find the religion. If it's not true, wouldn't you want them to know, and wouldn't you want to know? There's a short video. It's less than 2 minutes that I put on the internet. It's on YouTube. It's called The Hooks of Religious Upbringing. Please give that a watch and like it if you do. But in any case, check it out. And go ahead and say your sign off if you have one for today, and I'll give mine and we'll be on our way.
Be willing to change your mind. If you're lucky, you might just learn something new, and that's worthwhile.
That's right. Remember, everybody's going to some other religion's hell. Don't sweat it until they prove hells and souls are real. This is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. We'll be here next Wednesday at 7 o'clock. Hope to see you then. Talk to you then. Bye.
Bye!
Listening to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.